Okay, we continue our board meeting with offsetting.
Barbara.
Thank you, Hans, I think. Good evening, everyone. Please turn to agenda paper 8. This is about the offsetting update, and the purpose of this paper is to update you on the decisions that have been recently reached by the FASB on the offsetting disclosure requirements. We will not be asking you for any decisions in this meeting.
That's good.
But I'd like to go start again with a reminder of the history of this project. So because we have different offsetting requirements for U.S. GAAP and for IFRS, this can result in significant differences in statements of financial position for IFRS and U.S. GAAP preparers, especially if there are significant volumes of derivative activity. So the FSB and the G20 asked us to try to converge our requirements, our models. We issued a converged exposure draft in January 2011 with a converged model. Because of feedback that we received, the boards decided to go their separate ways on their and stick with their own models, but we also decided to issue converged requirements for offsetting disclosures. Excuse me. So we issued converged offsetting disclosure requirements in December 2011. These are effective for 1 January 2013. The objective of our requirements was to provide users of financial statements with information about offsetting arrangements, so items that are actually being set off on the statement of financial position, but also items that are subject to master netting and similar arrangements, even if they're not set off. The scope of the requirements were aligned for both boards. Another benefit of the converged requirements was that users of financial statements could also better compare statements of financial position for IFRS and U.S. GAAP preparers. Recently, the FASB has received feedback from their stakeholders regarding certain concerns about the scope of the disclosure requirements and some implementation issues for certain financial instruments. They discussed their concerns relate to trade receivables, trade payables, and also some unsettled regular way trades. Regular way trades or regular way purchases and sales are purchases and sales of financial instruments that are subject to certain time frames or market conventions. And so we have some concerns that were raised about these types of instruments. For example, there were some operational concerns raised by U.S. stakeholders that these types of contracts may actually end up being a master netting arrangement, and they would have to perform a review of all their contracts to determine if they were in the scope, and that such a review was not operational given the effective date of the standard. Others were concerned, for example, that unsettled regular way trades would again involve a systematic review and that they would not be able to get information for gross information for these trades in a timely basis for the effective date. Others argued that the costs outweighed the benefits because they did not think that users of financial statements are interested in these types of items. They thought that users were really only interested in items such as derivatives, repos, security lending arrangements, et cetera. And so as a result of the feedback they received, the FASB in October, the FASB decided, well, they proposed to limit the scope of the disclosure requirements only to derivatives, repurchase and reverse repurchase agreements, and securities lending and security borrowing arrangements. They are proposing a 25-day comment period so that they can meet the effective date of 1 January 2013. So this would change the scope and no longer result in converged scope for our disclosure requirements. However, the transactions that result in the greatest difference between our standards, for example, derivatives, would still be in the scope, so we would still have improved comparability for financial statements. But the requirements would cover different items. For example, if items were set off in the financial statements, they would not be in the scope of the disclosures if they were not derivatives, repos, or security lendings for FASB. So if trade receivables, payables were offset in the financial statements for U.S. GAAP preparers, information on offsetting would not be in the notes of the disclosures under the new scope for the FASB. Before the FASB discussed this issue, we had not been aware of similar concerns from IFRS preparers. However, since the proposals have come up, we have also been asked to provide similar relief. We think this is mainly because the proposals, the scope of the disclosure requirements were initially converged and this was a joint project. However, the ISB staff, we do not think that we should change the scope of the disclosure requirements. We think that the application guidance is clear about what the scope of these requirements should be, and we think the scope meets the objective or one of the objectives of the disclosure requirements, which is to provide more information about offsetting and credit risk mitigation. There have been some questions or discussion about whether the scope exclusion for loans and customer deposits should be applied to trade receivables and payables. We don't think that you can automatically apply that scope exclusion. We think that because we included that exclusion for certain reasons, for example, that collateral that relates to mortgages versus current accounts, and we think there would have to be more work done before we could determine whether that could automatically be applied. But we don't think there can be an automatic application of that. But most importantly, if you did not include arrangements, the loans and the customer deposits are still included in the scope of the disclosures if they are set off in the financial statements. So their information about these are there if they would be offset in our requirements today. So they're not fully excluded from the scope. We also wanted to point out the boards have already limited the scope of the exposure draft based on discussions during the deliberations during the exposure draft and burden that was brought up. And so we think that further limiting the scope of the requirements would not meet the objective of the disclosures, which again is to provide users of financial statements with information about offsetting arrangements, even if not set off in the financial statements. We also want to point out that comparison of U.S. GAAP and IFRS financial statements is not the only objective of the disclosures. And while we may have focused on certain instruments when we are discussing the IFRS and U.S. GAAP differences, it doesn't mean we should exclude other types of arrangements in the disclosures. We think that if we automatically excluded certain trades, we're going to maybe inappropriately reduce the information that is provided to users of financial statements. And finally, because of the required due process steps, we would not be able to provide any relief before 1 January 2013. And because this change, if we reduce the scope of the disclosures, would reduce information that would otherwise be available to users of financial statements, we would recommend there would have to be at least a 90-day comment period.
Were we informed in time of this? Suppose that we would have wanted to change along with the FESB.
Nobody brought issues to us, so it's not as though we haven't raised issues because of timing, and the timing's just a sort of secondary consideration.
Yes, but my question is, suppose that we have been sympathetic towards the research change, would we have had enough time, or have we been informed in time?
We would not have had enough time.
I'll offer my general comments on such kind of disclosure. I do hope in the future, we will set any disclosure requirement purely for, the converged purpose like this. Show two kind of information. I don't agree. I remember, about 3 years ago, when we conclude. After all, NIST conclude our 9, and FSB intend propose 4 fair value models, but with OCI, the categories for amortized asset. And we when think about, thought about, whether we both sides will require parallel kind of disclosure from us, even though we will not have OCI debt type of category, but we will require disclose, as if, and from FSB side, they will, also propose, if based on ISB decision, such kind of asset should be fair value at all, then they will, require their constituencies, their company to disclose both ways. I don't agree with such kind of requirement that we will have in the future, because once it's not fair, only one country have different requirements, and then ask whole world, to have two sets of disclosure, and secondly, it will be endless. Now we end different insurance standards. When in the future we will also say that the best way to do so is to ask parallel disclosure. And then maybe revenues and others.
Okay, you made your point.
Yeah. Can I just clarify? I'm not sure if I'm, but these disclosures, they're not parallel disclosure in terms of there's not a reconciliation. Because we wanted to avoid that for this reason. We did not want to have a reconciliation between the two gaps. But I would also argue that we would have required these disclosures regardless, because this was information that users were asking for, and we do not provide this information today. So I would argue we would have done that regardless.
Purely for our your purpose, it's okay, but if because of different requirements, then we require parallel disclosure, I don't think it is acceptable in the future.
Jan?
Well, you propose that we do nothing. I agree to that. Apart from that, we note this in our black book and go home.
Doug?
Yes, coming back to the specific to the agenda paper 8, I heard exactly the same complaint in Japan after having this paper. And I actually outreached them and what is the problem. And what they say was, there are many cases that they have account payable and account receivable at the same time from the different department on the different stage of the transaction. Say, for example, if you have a transaction with a steel manufacturer, sometimes you manufacturer became a supplier, but at the same time, manufacturer could be the customer. And there are many, many transactions like that. In that case, what they do is they would agree some contract which says, in the case of default or in the case of bankruptcy, we preserve the right to offset our payable against our receivable. So this transaction is very common. And this is not specific to the Japan, but maybe it is very common in other jurisdictions as well. And I have a strong sympathy with what is written in the Agenda Paper 8, paragraph 15. If we include account payable and receivable, they have to scrutinize. They have to look at all their contracts, which may contain such kind of clause or such kind of agreements. And that is undue burden. And point is, in our IFRS requirement, we require them to disclose it irrespective of this is offset or not. So you have to cover exhaustively all the contracts. So in this sense, I do understand what was the discussion in the U.S. and that this could be common in our constituents as well. However, having said that, I don't think we have enough time to make a due process. And to be honest, we cannot do anything in this last stage. But perhaps we could, if you look at our implementation guidance, if you look at the page, our page, agenda paper number, page 7 of our agenda paper 8, so in the footnote, it cited paragraph B41, and it talks about what is the similar agreements are. And to me, it is quite obvious that this is concentrating on the financial instrument, which is kind of a dealing type business. And also, this is talking about derivative and repurchase or something like that. So it is clear that our intention is to capture the master net agreement type contracts. So as long as this is clear, then perhaps a preparer could interpret this guidance. Although we are not excluding trade receivable and trade payable, but they would understand that most trade payable and receivables transaction is eventually out of scope. Not exactly out of scope, but most of them are not significant enough. They can understand in this way, and we can get around this problem. That is my suggestion.
I don't agree at all. I think this is valuable information for, in some cases, for investors, analysts, and I also think it's actually good information for management to know if you have coverage on your receivables. So I think there is no reason at all to consider easing this up. Sorry.
Can I respond?
Well,
but this is important, I think. I understand. I do understand. And as a management, I think sometimes it is quite important to see what is the net balance it is. However, there are many cases that is not really the point at the time of normal business circumstances. It might be very important when it comes to the bankruptcy. However, as long as the business is continuing to monitor those balance every single month, it doesn't really provide good information. Of course, it depends on the size or the nature of the transaction. If you have big payable and account receivable, and if you offset those payable and receivable net balance is nearly nil, in that case, perhaps those are very important information. But in many cases, some account receivable only and not many payable. But just in case, for the against the rainy day, they may introduce some clause to offset, to reserve the right to offset. So our requirement may require them to check all the contracts, but that is not really the point. So therefore, as long as we can convey such information to the preparers and auditors, then they do understand the purpose of our